Maruta.
Maruta.
Win.
Win.
Jaiva.
Jaiva.
Enjoyment of the tongue.
Shaishna.
End of the genitals. Asma. Ourselves. In all these forms. Apara. Limitless. Jaladheen. Oceans. Atikirna. Having crossed over. Kechit. Some persons. Rohasya. Of anger. Yati. They come. Vipavasya. Which is fruitless. Vasham. Under the sway. Hade. In the footprint. Ro. Of a cow. Majanti. They drown. Duchara. Difficult to execute. Tapaha. Their austerity. Cha. And. Vitrita. Without any good purpose. Utsrijanti. They throw away. Sad message here. Some men practice severe penances to cross beyond our influence, this is the demigod speaking, which is like an immeasurable ocean with endless waves of hunger, thirst, heat, cold, and the other conditions brought about by the passing of time, such as the sensuous wind and the urges of the tongue and sex organs. Nevertheless, although crossing this ocean of sense gratification through severe penances, such persons foolishly drown in the callous footprint and conquered by useless anger. Thus, they exhaust the benefit of their difficult austerities in vain. And we purport, those who do not accept the devotional service of the Supreme Lord can be considered in two categories. Those who engage in sense gratification are easily conquered by the demigods through the various weapons such as hunger, thirst, sexual desire, lamentation for the past, and vain hoping for the future. Such materialistic fools, infatuated with the material world, are easily controlled by the demigods, who are the ultimate supplying agents of sense gratification. But according to Sridhar Swami, persons who attempt to subdue the desires of the material senses and thus avoid the control of the demigods without surrendering to the Supreme Lord are even more foolish than the sense gratifiers. Although crossing the ocean of sense gratification, those who perform severe penances without service to the Lord eventually drown in tiny puddles of anger. One who simply performs material penances does not actually purify his heart. By one's material determination, one may restrict the activities of the senses, although one's heart is still filled with material desires. The practical result of this is krodha, or anger. You have seen artificial performers of penance who have become very bitter and angry through denial of the senses, being indifferent to the Supreme Lord. Such persons do not achieve ultimate liberation, nor can they enjoy material sense gratification. Rather, they become angry and through cursing others or enjoying false pride, they uselessly exhaust the results of their painful austerities. It is understood that when a yogi curses he diminishes the mystic power he has accumulated. Thus, anger gives neither liberation nor material sense gratification, but merely burns up all the results of material penances and austerity, being useless, since anger is compared to a useless puddle found in a cow's footprint. Thus, after causing the ocean of sense gratification to get yogis who are indifferent to the Supreme Lord, drown in puddles of anger. Although they may not admit that the devotees of the Lord actually come from the miseries of material life, it is understood here that a similar result is not to be obtained by so-called yogis who are not interested in devotional service to the Supreme Lord. Om Ajnani Kavaram Dasya Pranam Janak Kavaram Sakshan Kavaram Shri Kavaram Shri Jain Kanyam Anodin Sam Sati Kavaram 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 My benefit, just want to give a context of this verse. This is a section of the Bhagavatam where the Navi Yogendras, who were described in chapter 5, the canto 5, of the 100 sons of Rishabdeva, 9 became Uttama Bhagavats, topmost devotees, beyond the jurisdiction of Varna and Ashram, something like the Goswamis of Vrindavan were in a similar position, beyond the necessity of following rules and regulations, which are for the purpose of purification, so that one can come to the stage. They were at that stage. They were fixed. Something similar to Narada Muni is described earlier in this canto, chapter 2. That they, like Narada, they could travel anywhere. Like, you know, he played at Adina, didn't say he even had Adina. They just went wherever they wanted in the spiritual and material world, unbound or constrained by anything. And as they were traveling here and there, one time, on one occasion, they came to a place where a sacrifice, a apparently Karmakanda sacrifice, was being performed by King Yimi. And as they entered, came into the place where that yanda was being performed, they were like 9 powerful sons coming down the road, the path. And then he stopped what he was doing, immediately addressed them, and posed a number of questions. At first he appreciated their unique position, because he could, although he hadn't had any interaction with them at all, he could understand just by being in their presence that their unique status. And he posed a number of questions, and each of the 9 Yogendras, they addressed a particular topic with the summary of that second chapter, this one, that one, that one. So this is Drumila, this chapter. Is Drumila addressing the topic of the forms of the Lord as they appear in this world. Those of you that are a little familiar with the structure of Bhagavatam. In the first canto, chapter 1, there's 6 questions asked by the sages of Sutta Goswami. And one of those 6 is this one. Which there's 6 One of the six was, please describe those forms of the Lord as they appear in this world. And of course, in chapter 3, there's a list, 26 or whatever the number is, like the preliminary meaningless, without expanding. And then as the cantos of the Bhagavatam unfold, there's more detailed description of Lord Srinivasa and Vamana and Matsya and Kurma and Varaha and certainly Krishna. Old canto. Krishna Vamana. Parashana. So now this is 11th canto, and again, because this is one of the essential topics of the Bhagavatam, the forms of the Lord as they appear in this world. So he's describing that. And so this is a Mahabharata personality, Drumila, who's elaborating on that same topic. And this little section is, he's having the demigods, he's referring to the demigods speaking, where they're describing specifically in this verse the glory of devotion, one of the glories of devotional service, and the fallibility, because it's only through devotional service that one can understand the Supreme Lord. That verse from Bhagavad Gita. Bhakchama Adichanati Yavanyas Chasi Tattvataha. Tattvataha. In truth, one can understand Krishna in truth only by one means, by bhakcha, through devotional service. By the principle of bhakti, one can understand Krishna. So the topic is incarnation, and he's saying something similar to what we discussed yesterday evening from the 9th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says to Arjuna, those who are faithless will not understand this message of chapter 9, most confidential knowledge. Rather, they'll fall down again and again in material existence. So, faithfulness is necessary to take up the process of devotional service, as chapter 9 begins with that statement. So this is the same thing in a different way. And another particular feature of it is those who take to other processes, those situated in knowledge, who engage in some places Prabhupada calls this high-grade activity, that elevate one beyond the fray. The fray means like tat-tat-evi, talorjana, people in general, that just, you know, live an unregulated life because they don't know any better, they don't want to know any better, they just, if it feels good, do it. If you can get away with it, do it. You know, that kind of life. So above those people, above the fray, there's aspiring transcendentalists. So this verse is describing that amongst those aspiring transcendentalists who engage in scripturally enjoined activities that do elevate one above and beyond this ocean of material existence, distractions by the senses becoming involved in sense gratification. So the senses and the objects of the senses need to go woo woo woo. Enjoyment. Yehi samsparsha cha bhoga. Samsparsha cha indicates the senses approaching the object of the senses, bhoga, in the mood of enjoyment. Like savages, before it's offered to the deity, is bhoga, and after it's offered to the deity, it's prasad. same thing. But it's for Krishna's enjoyment and offered to Krishna, then it's prasad. Same thing, not offered to Krishna, it's bhoga. Similarly, the senses extended into the field of the material energy for the purpose of enjoyment apart from Krishna, that's bhoga. This is where misery of material existence arises. Dukkha yonaya hete. Dukkha, misery, distress, suffering. The opposite of the expectation of sukha comes dukkha by that procedure. So the Vedic paradigm is where there are austerities, tapasvis, that specifically undergo severe austerities. Now, one of our Govinda's restaurants, it's a common thing that in the reading rooms or something, for new people that don't really want to pick up the Bhagavad Gita first thing, they want to look at a picture book. In America, it's called coffee table books. Maybe you've heard that term before. Someone sitting drinking their coffee, so they just look through a picture book. So in one of those picture books, it was showing yogis doing their austerities. And one, just three pictures of the, one of those big picture books about that, big pages. There's a yogi buried with his head in the sand, with his legs sticking up in the air, and he's doing a headstand with his head in the sand. Then the next page is there's one with the yogi whose whole body is buried under the sand, and all you can see is little tubes sticking through the sand. He can breathe. I don't know who buried him like that, but you know, some assistant. And then, you know, in each of them there's a little bowl where people can offer some dakshin to the sadhu and stick his head in the sand. Anyway, then there's another one, is a man lying down in a big slab of cactus with big prongs. He's just lying there. You know, it hurts, but he's just like withstanding the pain and controlling his senses that way. And there's another one, the ring of fire in the middle of the summer, can you imagine? You know, in Arizona, build a fire up all the way around to the circle, sit in the middle, and, you know, it's already 100 and something degrees, and build a fire and just sit there. Then there was another one after that was the yogi with a big beard and Gangotri. You know, all around there's ice, and he's got his head tilted back, and his beard is floating on the ice water, and he's just, you know, doing his meditation. In the language of Bhagavad Gita, it's like parching the senses. Austerity in the mode of ignorance. But so, supposing the verse is presented, supposing somebody can do that. The metaphor is waves, limitless, apara, para and apara, limitless, like there's para prakriti and apara prakriti, apara, limitless, jala deen, oceans of misery until existence. Suppose you went and cross over that by the tapasya. They may think liberation. They may think liberation. But it's different thinking liberation than liberation. The downside is the main thing is the heart has to become cleansed. So when one has even a little attainment, put it in this context, maybe you learn some verses, maybe you can learn some nice songs, or you can learn some melodies, like I'm only going to sing nicely, or maybe something. You learn how to cook something very nicely. You become a good sweet maker. Or whatever it is, something. You go raise funds, you go to raising funds, you go to shooting books, you become good at shooting books. Or whatever it is. What happens if the heart is not cleansed? Pride. But here's the last one. The fruits of piety plus a heart that's impure equals pride. Without exception. And this is one of those, without exception, statements. One may be able, so capable, when you cross over that ocean of high waves and fierce wind and, you know, wow, difficult to cross over. But if the heart is not cleansed, there's pride. And when there's pride, well, pride goeth before the fall. And specifically, the manifestation focused upon here is this little puddle of anger. And even a little puddle of anger is such that the merit, the sukriti of those penances, they're all exhausted. Just like that. As it's true for the tapasvi, wouldn't it be also true for us? We're not tapasvi. We don't have that stockpile of control of the mind and senses and so forth. Now that's the basic context, because I just a little sharing. I visit China as part of my service. And in China, most prevalent religion in China today is Buddhism. And in Buddhism, there's one of the fundamental underpinnings that's very similar to this, is that desire is the cause of bondage. Desire continues samsara. They have a concept of samsara, birth and death. What it is that's reincarnating, that's not clear. But whatever it is, what keeps one in the wheel of samsara is desire. So the program is become desireless. That's the program. That's like dab it to death. Put the saber, the dagger in the heart of desire and kill it. And then you go to a good place. The place of voidism. That's like the good place. Actually, there's a little detail, but there's different versions of Buddhism, just like there's different versions of anything. And the most prevalent version today in China, and I believe also in Japan, is a place, a type that's called, I don't, this is the right term, but something like the the place of heavenly bliss, they have that term, something like that. And the way it goes is like this. You become a good Buddhist, you go to that place where there's, it's like heaven, there's long duration of life and lots of opulence and, you know, beauty that's just overwhelming. And there's a Buddha who, if you're qualified, then you hear the teachings of that Buddha that's in that place, and then he trains you to go to the place of nothingness. That's like the, that's it. That's a, something, that place of realm of what it's called, Western bliss. I mean, something like that. And so that's your reward for sense control, is enjoyment. Unlimited enjoyment, but that's not, you know, it's to test you so you can go beyond the unlimited enjoyment into the realm of nothingness. We have a term for it. It means nirvana. Nirvanas, just like Devi Shinsha Shunyavadi in our Pranam Mantra, it's called. Shunyavadi is Shunya. What's there? Nothing. There's no pain. There's no misery. There's no desire. There's nothing. And that's the goal. From where we are, the place of struggling, to the place of bliss, to the place of nothingness. That's like the ultimate destination. If you're really good. So ours is Manushanam Sahasrishu Kashyadhi Siddhaya Yatatamapi Siddhanam Kashyadhi Mam Patadam. The art for us is to know Krishna in truth. That's what's being identified in this. To know Krishna in truth is possible through bhakti. And those that don't have bhakti, they're going to either be in this turbulent place or this place of some persons, very similar to the Buddhist notion, looks like the bliss of being able to control yourself, whether it's severe over here or super optimist over there, you're neutral. You remain neutral. Like the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, all these different descriptions of equanimity. Seeing pebbles, stones, and gold the same. Seeing honor and dishonor the same. Neutral. Neither here nor there. And so not interested in something temporary. Unfortunately, the message is being passed on. Without shelter and devotion to the Supreme Lord, that is also temporary. Yenir Vindachi Vimukta Manunas, Toyashka Pada of Ashruta Buddhaya. I hope I would quote that person often. Vimukti Manina. Mana means mind. One thinks oneself liberated. It's just a concept in the mind, and you go for it. And so, I'm liberated. But it's not liberated. It's as long as one's Adishuta Buddhaya. The Buddha is intelligence, and if one's intelligence is not pure, Adishuta, Shuddha is pure, Adishuta is not pure. When intelligence is not purified, Patantita, one falls again. Because of that, or simple metaphorically, Prabhupada described, never hearing this in the lecture. You can send a spaceship into outer space. To send a spaceship into outer space takes so much to overcome the force of gravity. So, it takes off and then ejects that another one. Now it's soaring around in space. But how long can it soar around in space? Prabhupada's point is, unless it takes shelter somewhere, it'll have to come back. And certainly, people that are in that thing, they're going to run out of oxygen, they're going to run out of fuel, they're going to run out of food, they're going to run out of water, it'll have to come back. Unless they take shelter of something. So, similarly, Prabhupada's point is, no matter how high one may go, without taking shelter of Krishna, one has to come back. Patantita. But what a waste of time. Prabhupada told the story of one time going to Kumbh Mela, and there was this very famous yogi who was relatively young, and he was known that he could walk on water. In fact, he came to the Kumbh Mela by a mystic power of immersing himself here and coming up over there. Just like that. Yogis can do that. Move from this place to that place. And there's a different method than we use. So he was doing his exhibition of walking on water. Everyone went, ooh, you walk on water. And his father was in the assembly His father was a boatman. He came out of his boat and was shaking his stick at his son. Why have you wasted your time? So many years going to the remote place and learning to walk on water with a few paise even across the water. The boat. Why are you wasting your time? Because there's pride so that I can walk and no one else can walk on water. I can walk on water. Yay. For what purpose? To get from point A to point B, which you can do by boat. Why? What's the purpose? The purpose is pride. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu discussed this. Bhukti, mukti, siddhi, kami, sakale, ashaka. Once one has a desire for this or this or this, bhukti, mukti, or siddhi. Bhukti, material enjoyment. Mukti, liberation. Siddhi, kami, desire for mystic cities. The idea of becoming desireless is itself just the flip side of material desire, desireless. Definition by negation. What's that? The mind is ashanta. But by taking shelter of Krishna, this is the natural utilization and in the purified state of the position of the soul, having this healthy condition of desiring service to Krishna, relationship with Krishna. Like Prahlad Maharaj spoke to Hiranyakashipu in his prayers, please don't ask me to take a benediction. I know that you want to. Please don't. Because he said several things, but one of the things he said was, I'm not a vanya, I'm not a merchant. I'm not a merchant. This, between you and me, it's not like I do this and I want that. That's business. I do this, you give me that. But between me and you, there isn't any of that. It's just that one thing. You're the master. I'm the servant. And there's nothing else. There's nothing else. Just before coming here, I was in Los Angeles. And I saw, what happens when you go to a place like Los Angeles. Somebody I haven't seen for 18 years. So there's a devotee. I haven't seen him in a long time. We had some long-standing relationship when we worked together. So he said, I'm struggling. I'm at the place of my devotional service where I'm struggling to use the word entitlement. So what do you mean? And I had a sense that he explained, I've done this and that and the other thing, and I've sacrificed so much for Krishna consciousness. I'm struggling with the entitlement from others and from Krishna to receive something for all that. Then I just refer to this particular same reference. Think of Prahlad Maharaj and the pinch that you're feeling, the pain, the discomfort, as not that you're not getting what the reward and recognition you deserve. The pinch is desiring it. It's the contamination of desire. Whether you get or you don't get. Suppose you get, then what? I got it. And then you don't get, I didn't get it. And it's the happiness and distress program. Not a material platform. So we're entitled to our relationship with Krishna. We're entitled, as Prahlad Maharaj said, to service. That's our entitlement. And Krishna will never think that way, and we regard Krishna that way, he reciprocates by many things. And we approach Krishna with, the inventory list of what we want in our hands. And it's mercantile. It's a business relationship. If that's what we want, Krishna can deal with the center. But no, it's not the platform of happiness or love. For us, or for the Supreme. But supposing somebody has this other item, my wish list is, I want to overcome the ways of material existence. And specifically, in the verse, Krit Chikala Guna Maruta Jaiva Chaishnan. So there's a list of, let's say, byproducts of the three stages of time. Time is a fascinating subject. Just a little bit about that fascinating topic of time. Time brings about so many things. This thing that's a very broad picture. Creation begins with the living entities in time. Annihilation commences with Krishna withdrawing time. Everything collapses. The whole sequence of unfolding goes back into its resting place. The undifferentiated Vedan generates the Mahatattva, and Krishna's plan to create and stuff, and then when he wishes, he withdraws time. So all these things, the waves, are the product of time. In fact, the whole show is the product of time. It comes about because of time, it is maintained, and it's withdrawn. This is his energy. He's remote, because this is him. How we understand the remote, he who's beyond the senses, if we're caught up in the waves of time. But if you just try to overcome the forces of the waves of time, you don't take shelter of the Supreme in devotion, then there's this little puddle over here called pride, and it takes away everything. Just like that. It's like, voila. Long, austerity. Just like that, it's gone. I just end with this. It's a very wonderful topic. To understand that that's what the Drupala is presenting, King Nidhi must understand, we must understand, sheltering Krishna is necessary. To understand Krishna, sheltering Krishna is necessary. To enter into our relationship with Krishna, sheltering Krishna is necessary. Faith in Krishna and those who are delivering the message of Krishna is necessary. Otherwise, just a struggle. Yeah, that can be our choice. So one devotee, is a little anecdotal, but a very emotional sharing, one devotee was sharing that in Los Angeles. There was a period of turbulence in our society. The Zoroastrian era was this boy was sharing. And he looked for a way to oppose his desire to serve Prabhupada during that era, and without the detail, it was very painful. There was no place. It was just, you accept this, or there's the door. This was not shelter of Prabhupada. It's like, I'm in between, you take shelter of me, and otherwise you have no access to Prabhupada. That's not so. But that was a message that he was hearing from different people. He pulled back. Described that he went after some time in this space of perplexity and troubled hearts and so forth. He went to Prabhupada's quarters in Los Angeles and prayed and cried and cried for 3 hours. That there are things that are short-term, intermediate, and long-term benefit. And his prayer was, please engage me in that long-term benefit, because I see no place for me. I'll continue in your service, but remotely. And I wish to add value to this society that you have created. I just don't see how I can do that right now. we'll have to do that in a different way for now. So, the connection with the descending mercy can only be broken not by something external, but by your own doing or checking out, just like, you know, relationship with Krishna is internal. But we checked out. We went, you know, we turned our back on Krishna. According to Jiva Goswami, this is how material life begins. Bahir Mukhaji, the entity, turns its attention away from Krishna. Mukha means face. Bahir Mukha. Turn our face away from Krishna. And we walk towards this place of enjoying separately from him. And after who knows how many lifetimes, a little bite went on saying, hey, I'm having fun over here. This isn't good. I made a wrong turn. Made a big mistake. And then to begin to restore our relationship with Krishna can be motivated by, I don't want suffering. But when suffering becomes mitigated, then is there shelter in Krishna? Unless it's there from the exception, like the light goes on, I need connection with Krishna. That's not going to happen unless we have association of devotees that know the relationship with Krishna and shelter in Krishna is God essence. That's what Drumala is sharing with the king and what we're receiving from the Yasadeva, from his Bhagavatam. We must. That shelter-taking Krishna, the long-term shelter-taking Krishna. I may be down here, and that may be way up there, like, you know, too far away to even think of it. But we must have a sense of that's our goal, however far away from that goal we are. And as we take steps in life, that's the goal. Sheltering Krishna. And then there's support, even we're way down here. There's Krishna support, because we make one step towards Krishna. In the 12th day, Krishna takes 100 steps towards us. And it's true. And when you feel that Krishna just took 100 steps towards me, it's wow. Even as an insignificant nobody, Krishna cares. He knows, and he cares. And I only took one little step. I've been doing this really dumb stuff for so long, and now I just did one step toward Krishna, and 100 steps towards me. Krishna's very kind and loving, and shelter-taking in him. And that carries one beyond, different than the yogi that's doing this austerity and this and that. Easily plus beyond that duratyaya, very difficult struggle with material energy. Despite acting, acknowledging our relationship with Krishna once again, acting in our relationship with Krishna, even we're this, you know, fallen, foolish, and weak, and distracted, and so forth. We don't have qualifications. Krishna is very kind. He sees, he acknowledges, and he accepts. That's our hope. Asha Kanda, language of Rupa Goswami, hope against him. Krishna is very kind. That's our hope. And he'll hear, acknowledge, accept, and carry us to him. This is Krishna. He's very affectionate upon those who direct their affection to him. And then we can have some capacity to understand him, some capacity to understand him, to love him more and more. And the more and more love him, Krishna disposes himself more and more. so many things that a devotee can understand about Krishna that a worldly person, faithless person, simply struggling person will never understand. Pride seems like glue.
Yes.
I'm repeating so that our people in the back can.
When glue in a finger, they're cutting it off to get the next finger. And
something else gets stuck on your fingers besides, you know, getting the glue off.
And
I call it a tar baby. You know that one?
I remember the movie.
Oh, I don't know the movie. I just know the child. Go ahead.
So sometimes I'm trying to think, well, and I'm crying and all that. And as soon as I feel it, maybe or not, all of a sudden I see crap.
Yeah.
And it's like, it keeps sticking.
Yeah. It's ubiquitous. It doesn't go away.
What to do?
That's the question. Krishna! That's what to do. You make effort. And it's two things. Krishna doesn't mean I stop making effort. It's my effort combined with the sending mercy. It's really simple. Think of when that situation comes and you're seeing that beast of pride glaring at you in the face. Accept it in your heart. Think of Mother Yashoda and her trying to find Krishna. She wasn't able to find Krishna. He didn't want to do that. But she wasn't able to do it. But she continued to strive. And she, with devotion. Not, you know, I want to control my son. It was with devotion. I'm mothering. I'm a devotee. I need to become free from pride. Otherwise, I'm not going anywhere. It's this ball and chain, and I can't walk, but just make it run. I continue to strive to free myself from that. And other, you know, primitive disposition of heart is, you know, it's another one of those. It's just pervasive. You just move over here and you find it over there. It's over there, it's over there. Try to become humble and not feeling, you know, proud that I've gotten a little humble. It's a stain, it doesn't go away. You continue to try, endeavor. And depend on descending mercy. So whether it's the soda, she continued to try. Krishna saw her sincere, Krishna saw her sincere effort and her genuine devotion. And then it was successful. The Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur says, similarly, it's a lesson that in devotional service, these two things are required always. Effort and mercy. Striving by right means is language in Bhagavad Gita. Striving by right means isn't enough. Mercy is also needed. If I'm thinking it's my effort, well, it's insufficient. Krishna's mercy combined with the effort, not just like I'll wait around for Krishna's mercy to descend. I'm making an effort. Krishna sees the sincere desire behind the effort, and Krishna will assist in his own way, in his own time. Not because we're stamping our little foot saying, Krishna, hurry up and do this. On his time, in his own way, he's the controller. He wants to see that, you know, our sincere desire. Are you sure you want to become free from pride? Are you sure you want my shelter? Are you sure? How about a little distraction? How about a little sense enjoyment. How about a little difficulty? Then you just like lose it, you forget the whole project. You go run off and deal with the difficulty. What do you really want? So it's like that's, it's not, you know, it's not the exam of a child in school, so you see if they get an A, B, or C. It's a relationship. Different is relationship. What do we really want? Desire. Do we want Krishna shelter, or do we want, you know, relief from pain? You know, subtle and gross. No? Yes?
Anger is always bad, or?
What is always bad?
Anger.
Anger is always bad? Well, if there's a place for it. If you're Hanuman, you can get angry. You got angry.
If somebody is bad, and then that bad, so you have your angry,
That's inappropriate. It's binding consciousness, dulling, mode of nature increasing kind. Somebody does something bad. Where it's appropriate is in service. I'll give two examples. One is Hanuman, and the other is Prabhupada. And then there's us. When he found Sita, he sat on the wall and said, I'm going to go back now and tell Ram I found Sita. Gave Ram's ring. So Sita is not going to destroy yourself and, you know, to disturb the condition. So everything, mission accomplished. Now, I want to strike fear into the hearts of these wicked people. Ravana and his followers. How to do that? So he took anger. Or he was saying the same. Prabhupada said, Krishna stirred up anger in the heart of Arjuna, because without anger, how can you fight? But it was for Krishna's purpose. And for Krishna's purpose, Narottam Das Thakur speaks of these enemies have their place in the mood of service. Here's a Prabhupada story. Anger. This is at the Henry Street Temple in Brooklyn, where over there, a few blocks away, was the BBT, part of BBT. It wasn't BBT then, it was this time press. And there were artists who were doing their artwork. And once a year, Prabhupada would come, and the artists would bring their artwork to show to Prabhupada in Prabhupada's quarters. So they need help to bring their artwork into Prabhupada's quarters, so I carried the paintings, I think, you know. And then one by one, the artists would show their artwork. The whole year's worth of bhakti placed before their spiritual master, and it was to instruct them about the quality and the detail, but it was also like loving exchange. Because that filled their heart the whole year. So I was seated like right there in Prabhupada's desk was here, and I saw that he pressed a little button on his desk, which was a buzzer to tell the secretary was over there, the servant, to come in. So he pressed the buzzer right in the middle of this joyful, loving, laughing, you know, waves of happiness. He says the room was filled with waves of loving Jesus. Press the button. The servant came in. As the servant was paying his basis, Prabhupada became like lightning and thunder and storm and explosion. And I don't even know what he said, because I just like blanked out. He hadn't even finished paying his basis yet. He thundered something at him. And he got up and paid his basis and left. As quickly as that thunder lightning came, it went right back to joyful, happy, jubilant, And being with Prabhupada was one way to describe it. Was heavy because his presence, when he was happy, the room was filled with happiness. When he was angry, the room filled with because of our love for him, but also because of his presence. He would sometimes tell Bengali jokes. We didn't understand the joke. He told it in English, not in Bengali, but you know, the humor of the joke, we didn't understand. And then Prabhupada would laugh. He would get the whole body laugh. The room filled with laughter and happiness, and everybody started laughing, although we didn't understand at all what the joke was. Like that. No, his mood moved the hearts of his followers. Not just because we're followers, but because he was who he was. So what I realized from that was Prabhupada knew something. I found out later what that something was, the servant. The servant was a big maya, and Prabhupada wanted to correct his servant. And whatever he tried, you know, gently, he felt this was what he needed, and so he did it. It was like he had a sword. He pulled the sword out of the sheath, he showed the sword and put it away, and it was over. He wasn't controlled by anger. Like that, now then it's us. If somebody did something, then we commend him. He was for the purpose of serving his disciple, who Prabhupada knew what and how. And certainly, there was the wine was in place. His love for his disciple. And so, he utilized that tool for his well-being. For his well-being. Not like I'm upset with you. It was for his well-being, purpose. And it was over. As did Hanuman, as did Arjuna, as did Prabhupada, as did the transcendental ones, it has its place. But your question, starting point, is there a place? Yes. Only in service. And not otherwise. Because otherwise, we lose it. We're brought into the material plane. We can't be of service in the material plane. We're controllers in the material plane. Somebody did something I didn't like, and I told them, no, I didn't like it. It doesn't change the situation. We're just like stirring the material energy pot with the modes of nature. And it's the lower end. Kamesha, Krodesha, you know the verse. Rajo Guna, some Udhava. Kroda is, Prabhupada says it like this. Kroda is the younger brother of the older brother. Kama is the older brother. They have the same mother. That's why they're brothers. And mother is the mode of passion. By living entity contacting the mode of passion, Kama. And the younger brother, Kroda. So what's the solution? Well, minimally, cultivate sattva. And that's, you know, titiksha, tolerance. Here's, you know, it's hot for Arizona. You tolerate it. Or it's at night, it gets cold. You tolerate it. You know, that's the mode of goodness. And so as you tolerate it, it's not just like this verse, but you withdraw consciousness from the duality and invest consciousness in transcendence. Krishna. So now, in service to Krishna, what's appropriate? Let's take another one. This is simple. I like this. Because it's such detail. Now, Kuvera Madhidhika acted in an insulting manner. Like you're at the start of the question, behaved it. It was disgusting. Did Narada become angry? No. Be careful. It's really nice. Very instructive. He reflected. Here's his behavior. Now, what is the situation? Why are they behaving that way? And then he analyzed why they're behaving that way. Now, how to help cure not just the behavior, but what's behind the behavior? With their pride. So what can I do, Nardis reflected, that can help these two? What would be the best thing to help these two? That's the place to go to. When somebody does something that we perceive as like not right, go to the place, pause, that's more than goodness. Go to the place of reflecting. Why is this? And what can I do? How can I be of service to this person? And even if you don't have an answer to that one, you're protected from the voice of nature and speaking something harsh or foolish or just getting caught up in, you know, being part of the problem. You know, motive ignorance. People do something out of the motive ignorance and then we get caught up in the motive ignorance. You just got sucker punched. It's done. So let go of that. And so the sequence, pause, mood of service. My dear Lord Krishna, what is the best position of service? And it's, you know, we may not have the Krishna channel so clearly, you know, tuned into. Or Krishna may not be giving a clear signal just yet because he wants to see us stay patient and in the mood of service. And then you're not reactive, you're thinking in the mood of service. That protects one. The mood of service to Krishna protects one from anger. Now maybe anger is appropriate sometimes. In the mood of service only, and then immediately it's put away. Only in the mood of service. It doesn't control us, it's utilized in service, like Prabhupada did with this, or Hanuman did, or Arjuna did. And if, you know, one is in the mood of service, can do. They can utilize something. Narottam Das Thakur has written about this topic. These six enemies each have their utilization. We're not just like, kill them. We have to be in the mood of service. Humble service. Then Vaishnava. And then we can make the situation better rather than making the situation worse. In service. Guided by Krishna. You know, elevated Vaishnavas where, you know, our Krishna channel isn't so clear. Someone else may be able to use. There's some choices. In this situation, there's something you can do. There's 10 something, 3 something you can do. What resonates most with you? I think this one resonates. Okay. Then it will serve us. Okay. Something else? Okay. So the whole can you drink that?
I may have been back to the mouth.